and welcome back. Thank you for joining us for another great episode of the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. Today we are at the Tor Abbey Takeover with Lucinda Herron. And could you introduce yourself, Lucinda?
Good morning. I'm Lucinda Herron. I'm Tor Abbey's manager, so I think I have the best job in the world.
Sure. So what does the manager do? What is your day like?
My day can be very different. So some days I can be helping set up for event. Other days I can be out on the project. I'll be in the garden. Or I'm at my desk writing a funding bid. Very varied.
Or you could be in the Spanish barn talking to Lynn and Cullen.
That's right. Yeah, you never know what it's going to bring, I guess. But it's a huge site. You must get your steps in, I guess, because you're kind of here, there and everywhere.
Yes, so it's actually, the whole site is nearly 18 acres, and it's a scheduled ancient monument that goes right down to the beach.
I didn't realise that.
So we have the same designation as Stonehenge. It's that important.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realise that. And when you say it goes all the way down to the beach, I saw that in like kind of the gardens. So is Tor Abbey Meadows actually part of Tor Abbey Gardens?
Tor Abbey Meadows is part of that 18-acre site, so it's part of the original estate that was bought in 1930.
Is it the same management? You're still looking after not just Tor Abbey, but also the gardens as well?
So I don't look after those day-to-day. No. I do look after the gardens day-to-day, but the meadows slightly outside of that. And they're looked after by Torbay Council and Swisco, but okay. Not directly by
right.
me.
Right. Well, that's a lot of lawn to mow. I mean, that's a big meadow. So we're in the cafe. So when we were doing some kind of research before coming here, that the cafe is open to all 7 days a week from 10 to 4 and dog friendly. But this isn't really the cafe, is it?
No, the moment the cafe's in its temporary home in the Spanish barn, we've moved because of a big building project that we're doing at the moment. But actually, it is great having the barn open. People love to see it, and it's brilliant to have the doors open.
Mm.
I mean, that's where we are right now, and it is very airy, very beautiful.
Yes,
the coffee's
definitely.
Very tasty.
Yeah, the coffee's absolutely incredible. I recommend the cappuccino. It's got this big bouncy bit of fluff on this. It's almost like a marshmallow. It's gorgeous. But when we're talking about the cafe, are we talking now about the cafe that's under refurbishment? Tell us about that project.
So we secured £1.8 million to do some major capital works to the building, includes the south and east wing, and the cafe normally sits in the south wing, the west part of the south wing, so that's why it's had to move, and the gatehouse. And that is to take all the old render off, because that's not letting the building breathe, and put new lime render on, and do a little bit of re-landscaping. It's just all of the things that we're doing will make the building a lot healthier and save it for the future.
And just before we turn the mics on, you were saying how you have to have an archaeologist on site because you're finding...
We are, yes. So the render, the old render, the cement render is being chipped off by hand so that we don't do any damage to the stonework underneath. And very excitingly, the first week that they started, they were chipping away and uncovered what is a filled-in medieval doorway in a part of the building that we thought was Georgian only and didn't go back to the medieval times. Yeah. And we found some original, very rare, earthen medieval mortar. Okay. Above the doorway, so very exciting for us.
When you say medieval, what kind of time frame are we?
So 1196. So when the abbey was originally being built.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what does that mean for the abbey? What does like is that changing designation? Is that changing?
It won't change the designations, but it meant that work stopped for just a little bit, and the archaeologist was called in and took lots of photographs and made sure that everything was recorded before the work could carry on again. Okay. So it hasn't stopped the works, but it's just those sorts of things. That's why we need an archaeologist on the team who, if he's not here all the time, we can at least, you know, get him in to have a look at it.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. The project, when is the project going to be finished? When will the regular cafe open again?
Hopefully, fingers crossed, in about a year's time. That's the plan. So June 24, the work will be finished. But hopefully the cafe might be able to move back a bit sooner than that because they're doing the work in a sort of phased way.
Okay, right. So the cafe might be open during works.
Yes.
And then like you'll be able... But I don't know. I kind of like this one.
I love it in the barn. Yeah. It was sort of one of those decisions we had to make the business work. But I really like it down here.
Really
and I think it's sort of changing our thinking for the future, what we might be able to do, even if it's some sort sort of pop-up.
Yes.
It could be some really, really interesting event space if you had, like, local businesses in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the cafe only fills half of it, obviously. It's such a huge space.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's got my mind going. Like, I've got some upcoming events, and, yeah, I'm thinking, oh, could we use this space? I need some audiovisual in here. How's your Wi-Fi in the Spanish bar?
It's great. Yes, we have Wi-Fi. We have Wi-Fi in the barn. Okay. Other bits of the building, not so much. The barn is really good.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're going to take over the barn.
So this atmosphere is obviously quite different from other kind of cafes that are running in Torbay. And so obviously it's the space that we're in, but do you have any like kind of particular offer that you've got here, like in terms of your cafe offer?
We try to keep it as local as we possibly can. Obviously, because of the buildings we're working in, there are limitations on what we can serve. So we can't do things like chips, you know, so we have to think outside the box and do things that fit within what we're allowed to do. But that's great actually, because it makes us be more creative, but particularly with our coffee. It's the Devon Coffee Company that we are our suppliers.
Okay.
And the brand that we chose is called Straight Up, and that is linked to the family history of them. They've sadly lost his father at Rowcroft. So every bag of coffee that we buy, a little bit of money goes to Rowcroft Hospice. I think for us, that's a really nice connection as a very important local charity that's literally just up the road from us.
Yes. Oh, that's great to support a local company and a local charity all at the same time, and all by drinking this amazing coffee.
And it's really nice too. Yeah.
So what's the other streams of income for Tor Abbey besides from the cafe?
So we do charge to come in. It's admissions. And obviously we have a lovely retail offer. We also have a really interesting changing exhibitions program, which hopefully recovers return visits. We have a great membership offer, $11.96 membership offer, which is very much focused at locals. It's pitched at a price which is, you know, friendly for locals to come and see us. If you buy annual membership, you can come and see us every day if you want to.
Great.
And then obviously we do weddings and events, and the barn is one of our key spaces that we do that in.
Of course. So we've got a couple topics to cover. So your exhibits are ongoing through the summer, really family friendly and pretty exciting, and along with some events. But then, you know, it's also the barn too. We've got some questions about the barn. Where do you want to head to?
I don't mind, entirely up to you.
So yeah, why don't we have a look at some of these exhibitions? And when we looked at your kind of what's on, which is very helpful for your, you know, on your website, you're running an exhibition in cooperation or provided by the British Library about Paddington Bear. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so it's Paddington Bear, it's the story of a bear, and it's on loan from the British Library. And interestingly, we are the only place in the Southwest that it's come to. So this has been created as a touring exhibition by the British Library. It's been to 2 or 3 other museums, but nowhere else in the Southwest. And after this, it's going to be retired. So we are the last chance to see it.
Incredible.
And it's with us until the 5th of September. And it's a really interesting exhibition. So there's something for everybody in it. So you've got the typewriter that Michael Bond wrote the stories on, letters that he wrote to his publishers back and forth when he was thinking about the ideas about Paddington. Paddington is 65 years old this year. And then it's also got lots of really nice interactive things for the children to enjoy as well. So I think it's got something for everybody.
And do you think that's a good thing for tourists to come to?
Definitely, I would say so, because it's so family friendly, and I think Paddington has that mass appeal, doesn't it?
Yes, it
does. Everybody
loves
Paddington Bear, don't they?
Yeah, they do. What's your favourite part? What's your favourite part
of the exhibition? This is me, but I think it's probably the typewriter. The fact that he wrote Paddington Bear on that typewriter, and then to have a copy of the first edition next to it—that's
incredible.
Yeah,
I love that. And so, if you were a hotelier and you were trying to, you know, kind of convince people that to come to see the Paddington Bear exhibit, how would you kind of sell it to them?
So I think it does have that mass appeal. There's a trail around the garden that supports it as well. So there's something that the children can do around the garden and find Paddington bears and things.
That's good.
We've got some really nice booklets that go with it, so the children can take away activities to do as well post being here with us, so colouring in and things like that.
Okay.
And they're all resources that have been given by, you know, that we've got permission to use from the British Library that support it.
Exactly. And you've got some events coming up, don't you?
We do.
And so the teddy bear picnic.
Absolutely. So there's the teddy bears picnic this Saturday, right. And that's for little ones to come along and bring their teddies.
Sweet.
And I think there's a few more of those going along in the summer as well. They're about once a month during the summer holidays.
Right. And so how do people kind of access that? So is it ticketed or is it just like on the meadow?
It's absolutely ticketed, so it's in our garden, so it's a really safe space for children.
Yes.
It's our gardens are such a lovely space for little ones because it's a walled garden. So it is ticketed, and you can find information and book on our website.
Right, okay. So speaking of events, you've got some other performances coming up. One of them is like open-air Shakespeare.
Yes.
You've got one that is, I think, Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, and
yes.
I thought there was a third one.
There is. So there's one night when it's Romeo and Juliet. At Macbeth, and that's sort of a bit of a comedy feel. So
okay.
40 minute slots with a break in between. Really small troupe. I think there's only about four or five of them coming. And I think that's going to be great fun, great introduction to Shakespeare. But then a little bit later on in August, we've also got Twelfth Night coming, which is a production that's been travelling and it's been really popular. And we're lucky enough to secure them for two nights.
Is that one a bit more serious?
A little bit more, I'm sure. But then Twelfth Night isn't too serious compared to some, is it? But yeah, it'll be and I think our garden. Again, with the ruins and the layout of the garden, it would just be beautiful.
Yeah. Do you have like lighting and things? You know, anything to kind
they'll
of
bring? They'll bring a lot of the lighting and set themselves up, so they come in and you know they'll do all their production.
Yeah.
Okay, really interesting. If you what would you say? Have you ever gone to one of these open air Shakespeare events?
I have, but not at the Abbey, actually.
Okay.
So, interestingly, I've seen them in other historic houses, and they really lend themselves to it, because obviously you feel you're in the original place, you get the real atmosphere for it. And particularly, again, as I say, I think our walled garden with the ruins as a backdrop will be perfect. So I'm really excited about that, seeing what it's going to be. I'm working those nights, so I'm going to see what it's like.
That's great. So, yeah, we took a little trip kind of past the gardens when we were, like, going around the site, and we saw some ruins, and we were pointed out to the glass houses and so on. So what do you think is, like, kind of the most interesting feature of your gardens here?
That's a really hard one, actually, because I think it's so varied. I mean, obviously, you've got the medieval ruins of the original church and the chapter house and the buildings of the abbey from 1196, but also having the Palm House, which is one of the few very surviving examples of a Hartley Clearspan glass house with palms and, you know... Hartley Clearspan. It's from the 1950s, 60s. They're the same people that made greenhouses for the Queen. So it's really... And there aren't many...
So that's not a modern building.
No,
that's,
not at all.
Wow. It looks very clean.
Yeah. there aren't many surviving examples, and we're really lucky to have one.
Yes.
Obviously, with the garden being walled and then the palm house, we can grow stuff in our gardens that you can't grow in many other places, and it'll survive the winter. So it's something... And we obviously have the Potent Plants Garden, the Agatha Christie Potent Plants Garden as well.
I've heard about this. So it's like poison anyone? Sinister plants. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we're very careful how we talk about them. Obviously, they're all plants that feature in Agatha Christie stories.
Okay.
And our gardener, Ali, has created it with that in mind. So some of them are poisonous, but not all of them, actually.
Okay.
But they're all ones that she used, because obviously Agatha was a chemist, and so she knew what she was doing. And I think that's one of the reasons why she chose to use poisons a lot in her stories, because she actually knew what she was talking about.
Right.
So the Potent Plants Garden is to sort of tell that story of what she used.
And is the garden public to the...
It is, yes. Yeah. It's all part of the offer. So when you come in, it's the house and the gardens, and you'll get to see that.
Okay.
And it's also really beautiful, too. It looks, it looks lovely. So.
Okay.
I want to go back to that, the glass house for a second, because it looks like some of the trees are almost at the point of popping
touching
out
the roof.
Out the roof.
Yes. So about twice a year, we have to get scaffolding in and give them a severe haircut, because obviously they're in a lovely growing environment.
Yeah.
They want to grow, so they do cause problems with glass sometimes. We have to keep them under control.
So the haircut, does that ever go to a full kind of head trim? Are we taking off the head occasionally?
Occasionally. It'll depend on the plants, but some of them grow a lot more than others, but we do have to keep them under control, because obviously they will damage the glass if not. So.
No, I was curious, because when I saw I didn't realise it was such an old glass house.
Yes.
I was curious how you how you fit those plants in there, actually.
Yeah. So, well, have you been in to have a look at it?
No. We just saw it from the path.
And it smells lovely when you go in as well, because there's things growing in there that just... So it's a real sensory experience to go in there. And there's little birds and things that live in there too. So it's a really nice experience. And also, you can get married in there. We do quite a lot of weddings in our palm house, interestingly.
Obviously not huge weddings.
They're small and intimate, but very special place. And the registrars love coming and doing weddings in our palm house.
Yes. Is that what you call it? The palm house?
It's the palm house.
Because,
yes.
Yeah, on the website, I think it mentioned glass house. And so, yeah, it's not entirely clear that it's like one and the same.
Yeah.
But, yeah, palm house does sound quite exotic, doesn't it?
And then we also have our cactus house, our arid house, further up in the garden, which is home to a very important collection of cactuses. Please don't ask me too much about those, because
no.
I don't know.
You can't say important and then not get follow-up questions.
Know about them, you know, so they are nationally important. There's some very old cactuses in there as well. Joined onto that is our propagation house, so we grow a lot of plants ourselves that we sell, people can take a little bit of the Abbey home with them.
I think that's really nice.
That is nice. You know, I've been to a few botanical gardens in my day. I've been to one in Cambridge, and of course I've been to Kew. And so I never thought of Tor Abbey as almost like a little botanical garden here.
Yeah, it is.
So is there any type of designation, or is that how you...
The garden doesn't have a designation in its own right, but some of the plants within it are, as I say, are very important and monitored.
And historic. Yes.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting place to be a gardener, because obviously with all the archaeology underneath, the gardeners can't dig too deep.
Yeah.
They can only go down a few inches, otherwise they might be disturbing something, you know. So there's all of those challenges that come with gardening here as well.
Yes, because you're gardening in an archaeological, like a site of archaeological significance.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's incredible.
That is very cool. Actually, I'm thinking some of those plants that people are taking home with them probably fed on their...
Yes.
Decomposed.
Oh no! Are we going there?
Bodies of the past.
Are we going there? Yes. Well, interestingly, we do have lots of graves in the garden and the cloisters. We do. Yes.
You know, but I mean, what a great place to be buried.
Yes.
You know what
absolutely.
I mean? Because it'll always be protected. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I think that's quite
peaceful.
Because
if you go back to when it was an abbey, and you can see the outline of the original cloisters when you walk through, and you'll see some little marker stones in the cloisters, and they're all graves.
Okay.
And they would have been the canons who were living here. To be buried in the cloister, you're obviously quite an important member of the community.
Yes.
So they marked, we don't know who they were individually, but we know they would have been very important. And it meant a lot to them to be actually laid to rest in the cloister, because their brothers would have been walking over them and thinking about them every day. So to be buried there was an important
it would
thing
be,
for them.
What is it called? Consecrated ground that you're buried in.
Yeah.
And
so
it would never be used for anything else, I think, and it would never have a risk of being disturbed for eternity.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so peaceful. I love that. So, yeah, thanks for going there, Callum. Tell us about the rose garden, Lucinda.
Well, I'm absolutely no expert on plants. Let's start with that. And obviously, our gardeners are around, so if you have got some questions about the garden, you might be better to technically about the garden.
I've got one question for you. Our friends over at Juniper, the alcohol distillery company.
Yes, absolutely.
They were saying that they use your rose petals.
They do. They come and get some of botanicals from us.
Incredible.
Incredible. All sorts of things, actually. And obviously, we're selling their product in the shop.
I really like that local option.
It's about as local as you can get. And I think the really nice thing with that, actually, is also it's seasonal.
Yeah.
So they'll come and collect, like you say, the rose petals or whatever it is that's seasonal at that time, and then it'll get used in there. In their alcohol production.
I mean, it seems like you guys really like to have that local connections
we do.
With local businesses.
Absolutely, and I think we very much see ourselves as part of the community. You know, again, the Abbey's been here 800 years, looking after the community, providing hospitality for the community, and we're still doing that now.
Yeah,
and that's such an important. That's the heart of everything we do. Really, is that providing a place.
I'm embarrassed to say, but I've lived here for quite a while. And this is the first time I've come into Tor Abbey.
I think that's often the case.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's really great to be able to promote the Abbey and let people know there really is something for everybody, you know. Whether it's art, whether it's historic buildings or gardens or just having a lovely cup of coffee or whatever that is, there is definitely something for everybody here.
Yeah. I think for like a day out, if you've got guests and it's a rainy day, and you don't want to tell them to go play some board games in the lounge, actually this would be a great place for a rainy day.
Completely. We have lots of games in the garden for the children to do, and lots of activities in the house as well for the children to do. Yeah. So
we haven't even touched on the galleries, because that's a whole big part of it too,
isn't it?
Yeah. I do have a couple follow-up questions about the galleries, if we could just touch on those briefly. So how many different galleries are there? It looked like there were at least two.
Yeah, so there's a whole top floor that is the 800 Years Gallery, and that is a real museum experience with interactives and things, and that tells the story of the 800 years history of the Abbey in a variety of ways, and has exhibits that, you know, tell that story all the way through. And then as you come down to the first floor, we have one room that's more or less dressed how it would have been when it was a family home for the Careys. Because interestingly, when the property was bought in 1930, it didn't come with a lot of furniture. So we haven't got many dressed rooms like that. But then our green galleries on the front in the first floor is where our touring exhibitions go. So that's where Paddington is living at the moment. Okay. So he's on the first floor. And then we have another gallery that's about the Grand Tour. So we have lots of works of art that are linked to the Grand Tour. And I think that's the other thing about the Abbey. We have one of the best art collections in Devon, and people don't know that. We have three Raphaelites. We have works by Holman Hunt, Burne Jones. So really nationally important artists in our collection.
And you're saying if you get the annual pass for like £11, £12?
It's £11.96 membership. Sure. You're going to ask me the prices now, aren't you?
Yes, of course.
I don't have that information. But it's 20-something pound, I think, for a joint one for the year.
Sure.
You need to come about 2.5 times to make it to have paid for your annual pass. And the entry is £10.50, so it's 20-something pound. But then we also do a family membership and a single parent family membership, so it's really, you know, family friendly.
It is, and there's so much to do, and it seems like that kind of it is truly a place where there's something for everyone.
Yes,
whether, you know, you're into the art, you're into history, the gardens, the plants,
coffee,
coffee, or you want to like distill gin or something.
And it's just another place to sit and just
amazing.
Be it's
yes,
a real, you know, we have a spirit of place, and that's all about this being a haven for people within a busy town. And I think that's one of the really unusual things about the Abbey, to have something like this in such an urban location. It doesn't happen very often.
No.
Actually, you know, they're normally in much more remote locations.
Yes, you would imagine. Yeah, it feels like you're kind of on like a country estate.
Yes.
Like a grand home that's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, like a National Trust property.
Exactly.
But you're not. No. I mean, we're just like kind of 10 minutes from the office. Yeah. It's wild.
Exactly.
I love that.
A couple of minutes from the train station, you know.
Oh, the train station's right nearby too. Yeah, it's brilliant. Highly recommend everybody come over to Tor Abbey. Lucinda, do you want to give some shout outs to the team?
Oh, yes, so I have an absolutely incredible team at the Abbey, and they're amazing. So we have Ali, Sam and Laura in the garden. We have Verity and her team running the cafe, always welcoming.
Hi, Verity.
Brilliant. Hi, Verity. We're waving at them. And in the house, we have Elaine, Karen and Shearer, who look after the building and the collection for us. And then looking after our exhibitions and getting those in, and her team is Claire. And then Grace is our education officer. We have amazing education offer as well. Please look at that, guys, if you're thinking about coming with schools and things. We can do 800 years of history for you, all linked to the national curriculum.
Is that popular?
Very popular.
Very popular.
We're starting to grow it now. It's a fairly new thing for us. But again, it can all be linked to the national curriculum. And we work with in partnership with a local charity called Tailblazers, who are storytellers. So
we really bring it to life
for the children.
Yeah.
And they have a great day out here with us. So.
Fantastic.
And are you having like nationwide schools from
We're only
other,
locally
other counties,
at the moment, but we're hoping to grow that because we are, you know, I think that's the other thing that we haven't touched on with the Abbey. It's 800 years of history locally, but also a lot of those really important national bits of our history, like the dissolution of the monasteries, the Napoleonic Wars. You know, the guy that ran the fleet for the Napoleonic Wars was based at Tor Abbey.
Oh,
really?
His quarterdeck was in Tor Abbey. Lord Nelson has visited here.
Lord Nelson?
That's
incredible.
So you can sort of really pick those key moments in our national history and link them to the Abbey as well.
That's incredible.
Really nice.
I had no idea. I had no idea that it was this historic.
You know what? My expectation before we came in was that it was going to be like an old building.
Yeah.
Like, I've visited many castles before.
Yeah.
You know, I, there's maybe one or two members of staff that can kind of show you, put you in the right direction.
Yeah.
But not event space, gallery space, Spanish, you know, Spanish barn with life in it, with people kind of having their coffee and, you know.
Yeah.
Really feels like there's, it's a place of calm, but there's life, there's things happening.
I think that's it. And I think for me and the whole team, actually, and the other thing I should do, a massive shout out is to our volunteers. We couldn't do what we do without our volunteers in the garden and the house.
They are brilliant.
They are great. Paddington, we have to man that. That's part of the loan agreement. And we couldn't do that without our volunteers.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, they make a lot of things
every day. They make a lot of things happen.
That's great.
Yeah, so there is something for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think for me, we need to keep it relevant. We need to keep it vibrant and important, because otherwise what's the point in it?
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I do. Yeah, there is something for everyone, but it's very much a living space. And it's a historic place, but it's also so alive. And like, we're here on a Thursday at kind of, you know, 11 in the morning, and there's just people everywhere doing all different kinds of things, all different kinds of activities. Everybody's so friendly.
Everyone's got a huge smile. Everyone's
so great so here. Fast. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Highly recommended. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me on.
Congratulations to you and your team for such a fantastic, a fantastic place. Yeah.
But
we do have another kind of interview, and it's related. It's related to Tor Abbey. We're still in the cafe. You can hear the dog barking. We did an interview recently with Lawrence from Juniper, and he was talking about some new products and all of the pop-ups. We had invited him onto the podcast, and he came along to do a quick interview. Let's have a listen. 1, 2, 3, 2, 1. Right, we're here with Lawrence from Coastal Distilling. Lawrence is going to take the mic, and he's going to introduce all of his new products and services, pop-ups, vodkas, rums, and more. Here you go, Lawrence. Take it away.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Well, as you said, my name's Lawrence Traverso, and we run the Coastal Distilling Company on the Terrace in Torquay, which is the home of Torquay Coastal Gin. We make our classic gin there, and we're also making a rose and raspberry gin with Tor Abbey rose petals. We're also in the process of launching the Rum Brothers, our new brand, which is under our sister company, which is the Dolce Vita Spirits Club, and that also has our pop-ups. As well as that, under that brand as well, we have Clearwater Glacial Premium Vodka, which is a British vodka that we're making with Icelandic vodka. And it's a very beautiful thing. Both of these things look beautiful. We spent a lot of time developing the products, the bottles, the liquids, and they're all really, really nice things to start with. And the pop-ups are really about creating really nice times with really great DJs and good atmosphere and a sort of lounge atmosphere where they can try our new products and see what people think. We've got great cocktails. We've got lovely people coming to these things. And we're in Torquay, you know. It's all about pushing local and getting all of our products out to as many of the hospitality businesses that we can. What else do you need to know?
Right. So can we get the name of that vodka again? I think you said Clearwater.
Clearstone. Clearstone. Yeah. It's a glacial stone-filtered British vodka. So that's fine.
Bye.
Our Rum Brothers, we have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old spiced, which are absolutely superb. And what we're doing is taking 3 different rums from the Caribbean, one from Jamaica, one from Trinidad and Tobago, one from the Dominican Republic, and then cutting it with a rum that we make here in Torquay at our distillery there on the Terrace. So we make a white rum there, we cut it with the other 3, and we have some really, really beautiful products, which we cannot wait for the people all around the bay to try.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And, you know, not to mention your pop-up events, you also run Juniper. Tell us about Juniper. When are you open? How can people find you?
Okay, well, Juniper started off, it was going to be a tasting bar just for the distillery when people came in to do the gin school. But it sort of took over practically immediately from its our distillery bar, which is open Thursday, Friday and Saturday from 5 till midnight. It's very decadent. We have just our own products. We've got some beautiful gins, our gin infusions, which are sort of 4 or 5 different flavours. Everything is made on the premises that we serve, apart from the beers and a very small wine list.
That's brilliant. Thanks so much, Lawrence, and thanks, Paris, for coming along. So, yeah, if you that Paris is just like, who, me? Hi. That's brilliant. Thanks so much for the introduction to these great brands and to Juniper. We really look forward to your next event. Could you remind us again what date is the next one?
We've got next weekend. We have the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we'll be open from about 2 p.m. till sunset.
And where's that?
That'll be down on the bandstand in Torquay, just right by the marina entrance. You can come and see us. We'll have a lovely little terrace there, and we'll have all of our beautiful products.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Lawrence. Cheers.
Cool. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me. And we hope to see you at Juniper or one of our events.
That was so interesting.
I know.
So lots of new products coming from Juniper.
I know, a rum and a vodka. It's amazing, isn't
it? Which one are you more excited for?
I'm really excited for the rum. The rum looked amazing.
I was going to go the other way around. I thought the vodka sounded really nice.
So we've got a couple news items here. We've got some hotel news, and then we've got some news about some attractions, and also on festivals. Should we just six stories? Do you want to dive in?
Yeah, sure. So what's the first one we got?
Well, the Headland Hotel is now back in business. They opened on the 1st of July, and they put in a big refurbishment. As you recall, they had a fire on Christmas Eve, and so they've done a lot of changes to the kind of the front of the house and the kitchen, and then of course they did all of the repairs, and they're saying that they want to provide their guests with the best possible experience, and they are delighted to be open in time for holiday season. Well done, Headland Hotel.
And it looks like they've also made some minor changes to the front of the house in the kitchen with the ultimate objective of providing the guests with the best possible
experience. Lovely. It's a great way to be. I love it. So, right. And then in hotel news, there was a planning decision kind of last week, 2 weeks ago, about the change of use of hotel. And this is for the Three Palms in Sands Road. Do you know it? Your folks run a hotel in Paignton?
I think so, yeah. I think it's just down the road from us.
Right. So Westward Housing Group, they wanted to turn the hotel into 10 single bedroom, supported flats for vulnerable people. And their planning application said that there was an acute need for such facilities. But the councillors went against the planning, Torbay planners, and ended up rejecting the proposal. So it looks like the Three Sands is going to stay as a, I don't know, say as a hotel.
Yeah.
Over in attractions news, there's another round of funding that Paignton Picture House received, £285,000 of government funding, and it is to help focus on developing a vision for revitalizing the building for the Picture House and also making it a cultural hub in Paignton.
Yeah, I believe that the last time we spoke about the Picture House, the plans of it being ready were for 2025. So I guess there's still a lot of work that needs to be done there and probably a lot more funding.
Yes, exactly. We've got some good news from the Cliff Railway. We want to give a shout out to them. They're really kindly DM'd us to say that the final works and testing for the Babbicombe Cliff Railway are being done this week. They're recruiting new staff. All the internal works are done, and the certifying engineer is booked in for this week, and they're going to be doing the final sign-off and the testing. And so they're hoping to be open to the public very soon, and they'll be in touch with their opening date. Well done, Babbicombe Cliff Railway. We hope you come back roaring. Right. And over in festival news, we've got the report in from the English Riviera Festival of Music and Food.
Okay.
Festival of Food and Music. Yeah, it was a music and food festival. But, of course, it collapsed. And so there's been some scrutiny reports raised because the Conservative Council wanted to see what went into all of that decision-making and why it was approved. So basically the crux of it is that there was a waiver document that was, because the business that was putting on the festival was so new and the person who was running it had only, run kind of small companies, there was a waiver document. The waiver document itself followed the standard processes, but the document also contained unsupported statements and information that could have been open to misinterpretation. Okay. And that waiver document impacted on the ultimate decision to run. Mm. So there was a significant loss, you know, to individuals. There's an interview here in the Herald Express where they interviewed a local business owner who's personally lost 2,000 pounds because, of course, it's a food festival and they had, like, you know, food carts and, you know, lighting, security, fence, just all of these contracts and everything that would have gone out. So they lost 2,000 pounds. The Torbay taxpayers lost 20,000 pounds. The council's paid 20,000 pounds towards this event. And then also individuals bought tickets too.
Do those tickets not get refunded?
Well, it's bankrupt. The business is bankrupt.
Right, so no.
So I don't know whether anybody, you know, DM us if you got your money back or if you're still waiting for your money to come back. We want to hear from you because, well, I mean, I guess they're just saying a lot needs to improve when it comes to all of these tender processes. They really do need to kind of skill
who's,
up in
who's
that
who's holding
area.
The bag there? Who's actually...
The council is the one who approved it because it was on Tor Abbey. We're here at Tor Abbey.
Right.
And the event was supposed to happen over on the meadows next door. And, they would have to been the ones to approve it.
Right, okay.
And they've put in £20,000 of taxpayer money. And it's gone. Money's gone. Nightmare. So turning to some brighter news, there is a 2-week celebration coming up, and that is for England's seafood coast. So the PR machine is in full gear. Now, the 2023 Seafood Feast is from September 29th to the 15th of October, and it is shaping up to be bigger and better than before. We're going to have mussels and music, seafood and sacks, supping seafood at sunrise. I love alliteration.
That's too much.
And the seven chefs from the England Seafood Coast was an absolute triumph last year. That's on Saturday, September 30th. And it will also have one in Brixham on October 7th. And I think I spoke to Kelly last week, and I think they're trying to get one together for Paignton so that there is a Faces of the Feast and the seven chefs in each of the towns, which would be amazing. That would be really good. Shout out to the Crab and Hammer. I think that they want to get involved in that. And so we would love to see the boys there getting involved. Shout out to Curtis and George and Finn. Well, that wraps up our news this week. We've got a little bit of hotel, a little bit of events, and a little bit of attractions.
Any idea what the weather's looking like for the weekend?
No, I don't. But based on how it's looking on Thursday, I'm going to say not great. Let's say partly sunny, high of 20 degrees. How about that?
I'm going to say fully sunny.
Fully sunny. I love this optimism.
100% sun. And no winds.
No winds.
And...
Scorchio. Yeah.
Scorchio. Raining burgers and pizzas would be nice.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Sorry, it's lunchtime. I'm hungry.
I know. I'm absolutely starving. So it's a good thing that we're in the cafe anyway. So what did you think of your trip to Tor Abbey? It's a little Tor Abbey takeover.
Absolutely surprised.
Yeah.
Really, really surprised, yeah. Pleasantly. I didn't expect this place to be so lively. I didn't expect... just so much to be kind of going on. I really, really thought it was going to be an old derelict building.
Yeah.
And we were going to kind of find an...
like ruins. Shadowed,
yeah, ruins.
Yeah, because it's Abbey.
Shadowed room.
Like a religious site or something. Monks and things like that. It's so alive and there's so much going on. It's absolutely brilliant. So we actually do have a weather forecast for you, right?
Oh, I see. It's sunny, Friday. sunny.
Yeah, no, it isn't. He's lying. Friday, sunny, high of 20. Saturday, partly cloudy, high of 21. And Sunday, it looks like a little spot of rain, 18. So I would say Saturday's the winner. 21 degrees, that's not bad.
Yeah, also Friday.
Oh, sunny. Friday, of course, sunny. Brilliant sunshine on Friday. So, yep, thank you very much for listening this week.
Thank you, and...
What?
Goodbye.
Yep, let's have a listen. Gonna listen. Okay.